Okay, 42nd chapter.
When Yaakov learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" He said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, so that we may live and not die." So 10 of Yosef's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Yaakov did not send Benjamin. Yosef's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Yosef was governor over the land, and he was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Yosef's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Yosef saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. "Where did you come from?" he said. They said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." And Yosef recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. And Yosef remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them. And he said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." They said to him, "No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies." He said to them, "No, it is the nakedness of the land that you have come to see." And they said, "We, your servants, are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more." But Yosef said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you. Or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." And he put them all together in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Yosef said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined where you are in custody, and let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your households. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified and you will not die." And they did so. Then they said to one another, "In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us and we did not listen. That is why this distress has come upon us." And Reuben answered and said, "Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy? But you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood." They did not know that Yosef understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. Then he turned away from them and wept. And he returned to them and spoke to them. And he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. And Yosef gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to replace every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. This was done for them. Then they loaded their donkeys with their grain and departed. And as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. He said to his brothers, "My money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of my sack." At this, their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?" When they came back to Yaakov, their father, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, "The man, the lord of the land, spoke roughly to us and took us to be spies of the land. But we said to him, 'We are honest men. We have never been spies. We are 12 brothers, son of our father. One is no more, and the youngest this day is with our father in the land of Canaan.' Then the man, the lord of the land, said to us, 'By this, I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me and take grain for the famine of your households and go your way. Bring your youngest brother to me. Then I shall know that you are not spies but honest men, and I will deliver your brother to you, and you shall trade in the land. As they emptied their sacks, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were afraid. And Yaakov, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children. Yosef is no more, and Shimon has no more, and now you would take Benjamin. All this has come against me." Then Reuben said to his father, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." But he said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is the only one left. If harm should happen to him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring my gray hairs down to Sheol."
Any comments? Okay. Unless there isn't any. Do you see this? You know what that is, don't you? That's the name of Joseph. That's the name he carried for 90 years. He didn't change his name. Pharaoh changed his name. Remember? Pharaoh changed his name. And for 90 years, he lived to 110 or 120, maybe 110, I can't remember, 120 I think it was. For 90 years, that's who he was called. To all nations, around about. Now, some of you here last week, do you remember what that name means? It's an Egyptian name, by the way. It's not a Hebrew name, it's an Egyptian name. No one remembers, huh? Oh, dear. Yes? And the other was? What? Okay. Which one means which? Okay. Now remember, for when his brothers came down there, even during the second time, they didn't know who he was. Right? He was clean shaven. He looked like someone from a different country, but not from, of course, their family. He didn't look like them. He was actually, it's hidden, concealed. That's what that word means. Hidden and concealed. What did he hide? What did he conceal? Yes. His true identity. All right. Parallel that with the Messiah. What was he known to the, quote, Egyptian world, end of quote? What was his name? Oh, the Gentile world. Our world. What was he known as? Known as Jesus. A different name and a different title. Right? Different name and a different title. How? When does he open up and conceal who he really was? Did Yeshua conceal who he was?
Yes.
Oh, can you prove that?
He told Peter not to tell anyone.
Who revealed it to Peter? Was it Yeshua or was it the Father that revealed it? This is what's important to know. That which is hidden now is going to be revealed. Now, all of Egypt, it wasn't revealed to him who his really name was, Joseph, was it? But the house of Israel, as we learn in the next chapter, they finally found out who he was. Now, what was the mysterious thing you just read here today? What was the thing that Reuben said that makes it odd? Do you remember what he said? He talked about responsibility of the blood being on them. Now, Reuben didn't kill him at all, did he? He wasn't even dead. How did he come to the conclusion that his blood is on our hands? What made him think that? Do you remember the story?
Does he say, one that is no more, as he's talking about his siblings?
Yeah. They assumed he was dead. How did they come to that conclusion? Did Reuben really know he was dead? Or did he believe he was dead? He believed he was dead. Deception. So we also know from the story that four of the brothers were not there. Where were the other four brothers? They were down where? Back with the father in Hebron. They're tending the goats and the sheep in Hebron. Which Joseph was also part of that caring of the sheep or the goats or the herd basically in Hebron. The rest of the brothers were responsible for those that, where were they supposed to be? Well, they weren't where they're supposed to be, were they? So Joseph went up to find him, and there was by 100% coincidence, of course, you know. There was a man there. And he asked, where are my brothers? And this coincidental man just happened to know, right? And he directed him to a place. Where did he find them at? You remember the two mountains? All right. That's where he found them. So we're at this particular point in time. Let's talk about his name for just a minute because it's very important. Before we get there, we don't have to go to the story of how he came in charge. But remember we talked about the three things that he was given, the signet ring and a certain robe, garment, and a gold bracelet or chain. Three things was given to him. And he was what? What kind of man was he? Second only to Pharaoh, the most powerful man. Never first, always second. So in a sense, parallel in words, he was the right-hand man of Pharaoh. Right? He wasn't sitting on the very throne of Pharaoh, but he had the power of that throne when Pharaoh told him anything he wanted him to do, Joseph would do it. Right? Paralleling the same things. Now, the name is very fascinating. It comes from two different kind of words. By the way, remember he was second in the chariot? He had the most elaborate chariot, but was only second one, not the first one. What were the people supposed to do when that chariot came by? Bow the knee. Only place you'll find it in the entire Tanakh. That point and that point only. Bow the knee to the chariot, which holds a very important man. The most powerful man of Egypt, other than Pharaoh himself. That's pretty a lot of power, don't you think? Remember what the Messiah said that he told his apostles? All power and all authority are now in my hands. Remember that? When did all that power and authority fall into the hands of Yeshua? Before he died or after he died and came back to life? Yeah. Came back after. Now, we don't have a direct parallel here, but we have a parallel that as far as Reuben was concerned, and the whole family, brothers with the exception of two of them at least, knew that he was dead. They knew he was dead. Blood, all over the place. They didn't have this nice forensic stuff we have today. They couldn't tell what it was. So So we have a very interesting story about him. And he said, I am the most second man and powerful. I am the ones in charge. Now, the name. Zanach Pa'e-ne'ach. There are different meanings that they had come up with through the years, and some of them done some research in Hebrew, and they even done some research in the Septuagint that was written in Greek, old Greek language, not the one that they speak today, and they're very fascinating the meaning of these words. All right? This one means what? The hidden one. That means the hidden one. He's hidden. Who's he hidden from the eyes of? The people of Egypt? People of the world? Or father and his brothers? Hidden. Now, it also has a secondary meaning. That which I have hidden, I will reveal. Make sense to you? Now, when we read the book of Revelations, who is revealing something to us? Is it Yeshua or is it John? No, it's the revelation of Yeshua. Yeshua is revealing something. The hidden things he's letting us know. Now, how much do you know about the book of Revelation that you understand it? You say, it ain't revealed to me much at all. I got a lot of questions. I don't understand 90% of it. I think I understand it. And sometimes I'm so smart, I think I understand everything. Right? No, it doesn't work that way. It's really hidden. Now, we know later on in the story, we'll get the next chapter, we won't get there, you've already read that he is the revealer of the things that are hidden. But the first thing he had to reveal was what? Himself. Now, once he revealed himself, that's the next chapter, something happened. Hope. Salvation. Greek was translated in Septuagint. Don't ask me to pronounce that word. It's too difficult. It has one who furnishes the nourishment of life. Why would we call that for? He's the one that controlled the grain. Now, what kind of grain do you think it was? Wheat and barley. Very important, biblically terminologies is wheat and barley. Now, are there other grains? Of course there are. Any other kind of grains? Yes, there are. But the Bible's only really talking about two grains. Not that others don't exist, but it centers around two particular grains. One barley and one wheat. And when we learn a little bit more next chapter about these, we'll learn a little bit more in detail why the hidden things of the barley and the wheat were important. Yes?
Well, there you are. Okay. If Pharaoh gave him the name...
Yeah?
Okay, so Pharaoh, did he give him the name after finding out? Like you say, usually...
Did Pharaoh what?
The name that he gave Joseph, was it after all the events came to understanding...
No, when he came to power. Oh, with a dream?
No, I meant...
He gave him the name after Joseph revealed to him of 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine, and then he gave him advice. By the way, you need to have somebody in charge doing the job. And so Pharaoh says, yeah, okay, you're the one.
Yeah, but he told him the hidden.
How did Pharaoh know these things? Did Pharaoh know these things? Yes. What?
It had a lot to do with him being able to interpret dreams.
Yes! the one who interprets dreams. But Pharaoh didn't, excuse me, but Joseph said, no, it's not me that interpreted the dream. He says this, Elohim. Remember I said to you, from chapter 4 to the end of this chapter, into this 6, the name of, the sacred name is no longer mentioned. For a reason. We'll get there in a minute. Not in a minute, but sometime at the end of the 49th chapter. And he's also called the creator or the sustainer of life. Makes sense because that's who he was. For the Egyptians. And remember, it wasn't just the Egypt and Canaan. It was the countries around about. During these 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine, guess who held the power? For 14 years, Egypt became powerful, wealthy, and very militaristic. You had a chariot. You know what chariots are for, don't you? It's for war. The chariots are for war. They're not for going to the grocery store and picking up the groceries and getting back home. Wagons were used for that. Chariots are used for war. So we have Joseph being second in command of the military. Did you realize that? Second man in charge of the most powerful force of Egypt. It's a little interesting thing, isn't it? All right, now let's go back to chapter 22 for a moment. Those are just sidelines. So now, Pharaoh, his brothers are going to this guy. How many of them went? Benjamin. And of course, Joseph wasn't there. So that leaves what? 10. Interesting number, isn't it? And of course, they took their donkeys with them. And first thing that's very interesting here, that Joseph, Jacob brother, is a little bit concerned. Actually, not a little bit concerned. He was extremely concerned not to send Benjamin down the first time. Because same thing can happen to him. It happened to his brother. He's going to get killed, basically. That's how he felt and believed. Okay, so anyway, it came to pass that he said, go down there and get something to eat. At least we die. Very interesting here in the next chapter. We'll get more detail about this. And they had a talk to the one who furnishes the nourishment of life. The nether meaning of that phrase. Hidden. Revealing. And it says here, the latter part of this one, by the way, is God lives. Elohim speaks. When Elohim speaks, something lives. Elohim talks, something lives. In a sense, in the very beginning, in Genesis, when God spoke, things came into being. What he did came into being. So we're talking about the power of heaven and earth here. In verse 7, very fascinating. Remember, this man, not Joseph, or actually it was Joseph, did he greet them with open arms and said, long lost brothers? No. How did he treat them? How did he treat them? With gentleness and kindness and mercy or with chastisement, fear, and anguish, cruelty. Heartless. That's how he treated them. That's how that Hebrew phrase means when he says, He estranged them and he alienated them to such a point that he was cruel, obnoxious, harmful toward them. Well, you say, well, they deserved it. That's our thinking, right? Well, let me ask you a question. Has God ever spoke harshly? Has God ever spoke cruelly? Has ever God ever spoke mean? No, really. I wonder if his son's the same way. Do you think so? Oh, Yahshua never does that, right? Because he just chastises everybody.
I think he was testing his brothers to see what their heart was, if they were still like they used to be.
Oh, no. I'll grant you this. I don't know if that's what Joseph was thinking. I'll grant you that's what the Messiah would have thought. Now we have to ask ourselves, what is it going through Joseph's mind? I have a lot of questions that I had to answer myself, an awful lot of questions about this situation that's taking place. Because it does picture a man that, by the way, he didn't treat any other people from other countries coming into the land to buy grain. Just these. Others from the land of Canaan, different group of people, could come in and get the grain and go back home. But not them. Is it kind of like he's getting even? Now the interesting thing, verse 8, and Joseph knew his brothers, but they knew him not. And the next statement is very fascinating. And Joseph did something. What did he remember? What dream did he remember? I'm sorry, what? Bowing.
Yeah.
You remember when that name, the chariot comes? What are you supposed to do? Bow. One knee in the ground, honor that man. Even his presence, you bow, honor that man. He is life or death over you. That's how simple that statement is. Now, does Yahshua have life and death over you? Yes. He said, the Father doesn't judge anybody. I will judge whether one lives or one dies. Right? Pretty powerful, don't you think so? So here is Joseph. The world around about the other countries, they were living. They were buying the grain, going back home, buying the grain, going back home, doing just fine. But not Jacob's family, or should I say, not Israel. Because God deals with Israel, because he has chosen them for a purpose. And out of Israel came Joseph. Out of Israel came the provider for life. Out of Israel came the sustainer of life on the physical plane in relationship to, quote, grain, end of quote. You understand what I'm saying? So remember, what do you remember? Behold, your sheaves round about me made obedience to my sheaves. Now, that's odd. We only have, how many brothers were there bowing down before Joseph? Not 11, just 10. So he told that dream, he's telling it to the 10. Benjamin wasn't there when that dream was told. The second dream, which appears in the next chapter, now Benjamin's there. And now Benjamin is paying homage to his brother. All right, a little different story. We'll get there when that time comes. And anyway, verse 10. And he called him a spy. He says, we're all one family here. And we have 12 sons, you know. We're true. The word true means we are honest. We are just. We are good. We are upright. That's basically what that word means. Well, you know, what's going through Joseph's mind? Well, there's one little thing I know about you. At least I know about some of you. We'll get more specific about that later. He says, no, you come down to see the nakedness of Egypt. Nakedness of Egypt? The vulnerability of Egypt? How you could take advantage? 10 guys? They didn't come down with an army. They came down with donkeys. They came down with donkeys to put grain on top of the donkeys and they go back home. Right? And they stopped by, we'll get a story here later. But he was rude to them, wasn't he? He wasn't kind. He wasn't about to be nice to them. But he had a reason behind it all. We'll get there when that time comes. And then they said, verse 13, thy service, 12, and of course, land of Canaan, and one is youngest is with his father, and of course, the other one is dead. Whomever spoke this said to him, he is dead. More than likely, it would have been Reuben. Because Reuben's the first one to start speaking out. And so Joseph, or I should say, this man of Egypt, said to them, oh, really? That's what you say? No, I say you're spies. Really odd argument, don't you think? But there was no court. There were no court of law. No judges. No lawyers supporting you. No proof that you are innocent until you're proven guilty. No, think about you're guilty until proven innocent. You're just plain guilty because I said you're guilty. Therefore, you are spies. Which, by the way, is a death sentence. The death sentence. It's not a living sentence, it's a death one. Thereby you shall be proven. Very fascinating statement in the 15th verse. Who did Joseph swear by? He did not swear by Elohim. Whew. Pretty powerful. He says, by the life of Pharaoh. That's a pretty powerful swear. That's a pretty powerful oath. Don't you think so? And by the life, verse 16, send one of you and let him fetch your brother, and ye shall be kept in prison, and your words will be proven whether you are true or not. Or else, by the life of Pharaoh, he is swearing again, you are surely proof you were spies. How you do that? Well, very interesting phrase here. What does verse 17 say? 3 days! 3? I wonder what it has any meaning whatsoever. It's coincidental, of course. Right? It just happened to be 3. They don't think Joseph had something in mind, or that God, through Joseph, had something in mind. However you want to be. And so, Joseph swears by the life of Joseph and puts him in prison for 3 days. And then, verse 18, the man of Egypt, that's what they brothers called him, remember? When he responded as the man of Egypt. Well, that's the next chapter, I'm sorry. They call him the man of Egypt. Very interesting because very seldom is the word man used to be a distinguishing factor. It happened to Joseph, and it happened to Moses. Two men were called the man. Interesting, both had to do great association with Egypt. That is, the non-Israeli world. And now he goes on. Okay, and he says, now, on the third day, do this and live. Now he doesn't say, by the life of Pharaoh. I fear Elohim. He swears by Pharaoh, but he's afraid of God. On the third day, what did he do? Did he just change his mind? Or maybe God spoke to him, it doesn't say that, in another dream. It says, let him go. I don't know. Doesn't tell us that, does it? You can suppose anything you want. Since it's not written there, I'm not going to say yes.
I think it's very interesting that the real spy here is Joseph.
Huh?
The real spy here is Joseph. Oftentimes,
he's a double spy.
Yeah.
Double agent.
Oftentimes, when somebody accuses us of something and we get really, really angry, it's because they're right. And we're just not ready to admit it quite yet.
Interesting way to put it that way. It's kind of cool. Okay. I'm almost finished here. I got to quit real quick here. This is a good point to stop. Okay. And so he says, bring your youngest brother. Oh, yes.
When he says by the life of Pharaoh like that, does he mean he would take Pharaoh's life if they didn't do
what
he said?
Oh, no. By the life of Pharaoh, I have power to kill you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Not by the death of Pharaoh, but by the life of Pharaoh. Pharaoh's got to back me up, no matter what. When you even quote, use his word, swear by the living God, who are you talking about? A dead one? Or one that has power over life? Is that right? Same thing with Pharaoh. Pharaoh has power over death. It was given to Joseph to do the execution. All right? Same thing with Messiah. Same pattern with Messiah. We're coming to an end here. And then he says, and they said to one and started talking to one another. And they said, and what we saw, or in that we saw the anguish of his soul, keep that phrase in mind because it comes up again later. Not really later, but close to it. When he besought us, and we would not hear or respond. Now, that was when he's in the pit, screaming for his life. They pulled him out of the pit, out of the grave. Not they, someone else did. It wasn't the house or family or brother or relatives of Jacob. It was a Gentile or one who was not allowed to Israel that pulled him up out of the bottomless pit. Interesting. Keep that in mind. Now, therefore, is this distress, this problem has come upon us. Payback time? Is that what Joseph's thinking? I'm going to end right here at verse 22. Then we'll go next week about 22. And Reuben said something. And he spoke. He says, spoke I not unto you, those he is other brothers, do not sin against the child. That's what he said. And you can go back and read it. Reuben had no want, any part of harming Joseph in any way, shape, or form. And he believed something. And ye would not hear, therefore behold, also his blood is required. Here Reuben, unknowingly, but believing that Joseph was killed by a wild animal. Just like the other four who were in Hebron, when they heard the news, they believed he was killed by a wild animal. Jacob, when he heard and the garment brought to him, he believed he was killed by a wild animal. So now we're down to, Reuben didn't know. Did Simeon know?
I think.
Did Levi know? Did Judah know? Well, we know for sure Judah knew something about it. Levi is a little difficult to nail down. But we'll see here that Joseph knew exactly who did what. So we're getting it down out, not to the all ten were guilty. We're getting down to a specific individual that was guilty. And that specific individual, you will see, repents under terrifying fear that that man of Egypt, terrified. We'll talk about that next week. Maybe. We've got to finish this chapter. I'm not going to be able to finish it today. It's already 3 o'clock, left at 3. Any comments? Yes.
Well, I think that would explain a couple of things. The fact that both of the sons didn't really know what was really going on. Number one, that might explain why Judah basically left the family after this. And I
or
also,
during this, whatever.
Or
yeah.
Around that same time.
Somewhere,
he left
yeah.
the family sometime yeah. just before, just after this. But number two, if most of the sons, particularly Reuben, presumed that Joseph was dead, then that explains why no one went after him. Because if Reuben had known or somehow discovered at some point that Joseph was actually alive,
yeah.
Reuben probably would have gathered, you know, the other brothers that he could gather with him to try to go back and capture him back.
Yeah.
Or buy him back or do something to get him back.
To get him back home.
But since all of them presumed he was dead, except for the ones that really didn't want him around in the first place, that's why there was no expedition to right. kind of go out and try to save him. Because they all thought he was dead.
Another comment over there. Down here.
Genesis 37 and verse number 29, it says, Reuben returned to the pit. Indeed, Joseph was not in the pit. And he tore his clothes, and he returned to his brothers and said, the lad is no more, and where shall I go? So they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid, the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. So it sounds like Reuben was there when Joseph's tunic was torn and
maybe,
soaked in
maybe
blood.
Not. But that's beside the point. He thought he was dead. At this particular point in time, in the 42nd chapter, he believed that Joseph was dead. His blood is on there. When they use that word blood, they mean they are responsible for the death of someone. The life is in the person. Life is in the blood. Not in something else. And so when they use that phrase, biblically speaking, when it says the blood is on our hands, we killed him, or it got killed and we're responsible for it, because I don't know if Reuben knew that much, what happened to what he was kidnapped. I think Reuben believed, because he did say the blood is on our hands. He had no knowledge. He could have said, would not have said the word blood. He says his slavery is on our hands. His bondages are on our hands. He would have said something of that nature. He didn't. He said the word blood. It was a very, very strong statement in biblical phrases. Even the New Testament, by the way.